Hey, how you doing? Thanks for downloading the show. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. My name is Eric. I'm your host. I have an eclectic YouTube channel and this companion podcast where we talk about what we think are interesting things, and I hope you find them interesting as well. Today, my good friend Rick is here, and we're going to be talking about a garage door repair that I know nothing about, but he texted me and said, hey, I just fixed my garage door. And I'm like, hey, let's make a podcast. So here we are, sir.
Good morning, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm great. Isn't it? I'm supposed to be doing my taxes right now. And I'm like, oh, podcast, more fun.
Yes, yes. Almost anything is more fun than taxes. It's been an amazing little journey. I had on my garage door, I wish I only had one garage door, but I have two with a pillar in the center.
Yep.
And the two are too narrow, and I really have thought maybe I need to put a header bar in and take out that center pillar, but I'm too lazy for that, so I struggle with what I've got. But there's a 1997 Sears garage door opener on each side. Yeah, just your standard Chamberlain / Sears garage door opener from that era.
So that's a 33-year-old garage door.
Yeah, and they do a good job, because I have, you know, new garage doors. They're super light. They're the aluminum ones or metal or whatever. And so they're easy to move up and down, so they don't take a lot. But what I had was a garage door sensor failure. You know, the little backup, if there's something that's blocking the light between the two of them, the garage door will not close.
Oh, so in case there's someone or something in the path of the garage door coming down to close, the little electric eye beam catches that and it turns off the garage door opener.
Exactly. And so, you know, if there's a kid there, or God forbid a dog, you wouldn't want to strangle a dog. You know, any of those things. Or even just a little early on the button as you're rolling in or rolling out, and yep, the door comes down your car, it tends to mar the finish.
Crunch.
Yeah. And so they're kind of important. And so, and I thought, well, you know, damn, it's on Amazon, everyone's favorite store, I guess. The replacements were only, I think, $30, and I got two pair.
So these are the sensors. You're going to replace the left and the right side units.
Yeah, there's just two wires on each sensor. How hard could this be, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Hence, we're here talking about it.
Yeah. And it only, so I got a pair for each side, and the two of them cost me, two sides cost me $30 total. And I thought, well, this is a bargain. I can do it in a half hour or so. I finished the second door in 10 minutes, and it works perfectly. The first door took me 4 hours.
Wow.
And this is just a cautionary tale for people. But and I'll explain why it's cautionary, because the fix was relatively simple. Two wires on each sensor, left and right. One's black, one's white. You cut out the old sensor. You wire in the new sensor, black to black, white to white on each side. And that's what the directions said to do. But unbeknownst to me, these poorly manufactured or quality controlled units made in China had the wires reversed.
Oh.
And so, and there was no sticker on the box. There was nothing in the directions saying, you know. And so I dickered with that forever, you know, trying to figure out, cutting and recutting my connections, making them again, putting the ties on them, and I couldn't figure it out. And so I came back into the house, went to the Amazon site, and rolled down to the reviews and actually read what people said. And you've mentioned this before, and that's the reason I thought we'd do a podcast about it. Read the reviews. There are tons of helpful information in there. Could have saved me hours. And what happened was, when they manufactured these, the quality control was off, and their polarity on those two sensors on each side were switched. And so you needed to go from black sensor to white garage door wire, and white sensor to black garage door wire on each side.
Wow.
And in this case, polarity matters. It's a it's not like a light bulb where, you know, the current will go through either direction.
Right.
You know, this it has a diode in there that it senses, and it looks make sure the current is complete. And it does that at a certain frequency. It generates a particular voltage, and that's got to happen by the polarity being correct. It just doesn't work if it's backwards. And so I spent 4 hours on one door fooling with this thing and cussing up a blue streak in the garage and throwing wrenches and, you know, wire cutters and all kinds of stuff until I finally went in and just looked it up. And there were about five people that were as frustrated as I was, but there's one guy that says, you know, hey, this is what happened. It took me a while to work it out. And so it's just think through things. Don't tear stuff up. And to be sure to, you know, read through all the comments and see if people have had, you know, problems or if they have tips and tricks. And it's actually a wonderful resource for people that are doing in the do-it-yourself business, you know?
Yeah, there is something to be said also for buying. I mean, this is a very old machine, so buying the brand name part would probably be impossible. But especially I found when it comes to small engine carburetors for like Briggs & Stratton, the clone is $20.
Right.
On Amazon. The actual carburetor is $60 to $80. I will buy the $60 to $80 carburetor. Because there are so many nuances between, it could be a 6-horse Briggs & Stratton, but from a different year. So it's just frustration time. But the flip side of that is I have a small chainsaw. It's like a 12-inch bar. You know, it's kind of, you can clip on your belt and climb up a tree and whip it around. And for that, I bought a clone carburetor and it works phenomenal. So yeah, going through the reviews, going through the questions, some of the questions are pretty stunning. Okay, we're going to go down a rabbit hole, but I don't have any snow boots. And I finally was like, I should buy, because pandemic, everything disappeared.
Yeah.
And so this spring, I thought, you know, maybe the boots are back in stock. So I went on the wire cutter site to see which ones they recommended. And I have some arthritis issues with my feet, so I need a lot of room because my joints are swollen. And I looked at these boots, and then I went to various sites. I went to Amazon, I went to Walmart, and I went to a shoe site. And I ended up buying them from Walmart, actually.
Right.
And it was less about price. It was more about I just felt they had the size I needed. So you don't always have to go why am I telling the story? You don't just have to go to Amazon for this, but you can do a wide search. And there are sites that that's going to be that aha moment for that kind of thing.
Right. And yeah, some of the questions, by the way, when you read them on Amazon, you're just, you know, stunning.
Oh, now I know why I was telling that story. Oh, okay. In addition to saying, look at their sites.
I was trying to bring you back around to that point. I figured there was something there.
So on Amazon, I mean, you know, I was looking at some, in addition to the rubber boots I bought, I was looking at some rubber leather boots. Mm-hmm. And it says right there, leather boot. And then someone in the comments is like, is any part of this made out of leather? I don't want to have any animal products touching my skin. And there were like 35 answers, and some of them were pretty, pretty funny. Oh. As polite as, did you read the description? To some others that were, they were just like, ooh, that hurt.
Yeah.
But there's just, people are kind of lazy. They're like, well, I don't want to bother reading it. I'm just going to ask a question. And then someone will serve me an answer, you know? And so that person got spanked pretty bad.
You know, I bought a monitor stand, you know, one of those you clamp onto your desk.
Onto the table? Yeah,
onto your table. And then it has a plate. And There are two sizes of plates that go on the back of these monitors, depending on exactly how big they are. And I forget what they're titled, what the nomenclature is, but there are only two. And it says very clearly in the description what plate was on the back of the monitor and, or on the back, on the stand. And then your monitor says what plate fits back there. And the havoc people caused in the questions on that on Amazon were just phenomenal. They were measuring diagonally, and between these screws and the second and the bottom screw and will it do this? And I was like, it's standardized. You kind of look up the standard and you match one standard to the next, and that's how it fits. It's like saying, it's SAE or it's metric,
right?
If it's a 4 millimeter metric, it's going to work. And people are lazy, and I understand some people just don't have the background, but sometimes the questions they ask. I bought some of these Wellington style rubber boots, kind of neoprene. I forget what the brand is, but they're neoprene on top. And when I was looking at that, there was a picture of the pattern of the bottom of the boot, the sole, on the website. And there were so many questions about, well, is this pattern good for wet situations? How will this work on slippery rocks? I said, well, it's a neoprene boot and it's got a rubber sole with this pattern on it. Make up your own mind, Everybody wants an absolute perfect guarantee that what you buy through the mail is actually fit to the purpose you want to put it to.
For cheap.
For cheap. And frankly, I am absolutely amazed how much I get that comes and it's perfectly fitted to what I wanted it to do. The other thing I wanted to mention about the garage door opener, a technique, and I want to emphasize this because I do not support this idea at all. This is just a testing technique. Don't rig your garage door this way. But if you're replacing these sensors, and occasionally one sensor is just bad and it didn't work, up at the back of your garage door opener, the box on the ceiling, hook them up there and face the eyes toward each other to save you having to troubleshoot that wire all the way down and everything, and make sure that they're working there. Now, a lot of people, and this is the part I don't support, put double-sided foam tape on the back of their sensors and stick them up on that box looking at each other. And that's one, it's not code, but if you damage your car, kill a kid, or hurt a dog, you're going to feel real bad about that.
Yeah.
Because you backed out over them and the sensors, you essentially disabled the sensors.
And there's a reason why that's there.
Yeah. Well, and it just makes sense. But I do say there's a special place in hell for the person who decided to use a single strand solid core wire to run from the sensors all the way up to the box on the ceiling. I mean, that's high vibration, high shake, high everything up there, high movement.
Yeah.
And that wire breaks like you wouldn't believe. It gets work hardened, it gets brittle.
Yeah, and it fatigues.
Yeah, it fatigues and then it breaks, and it can be in the middle of a the insulation, so you don't find it.
Yeah,
and those problems are hard to fix. Anyway, my quick tip today is to read down through all the comments, and many times you're not the first person to find something, and there'll be people that have worked around the problem. They might not be happy about it, but they've worked around the problem and they can tell you exactly what's wrong.
Let me save you from that. Hey, would you be interested in supporting the show and getting some behind-the-scenes stuff that I don't share out to the general public? I've talked about Patreon before here. It's a program where it's kind of like the PBS model of a monthly support. So I'm asking for a cup of fancy coffee a month, if you'd like to consider that. And in return, I share with you sometimes stuff 4 times a week. Sometimes it's once a week. It just depends on where my brain is at. But I'm looking at the posts I've done recently. You can get them by email or on the Patreon app. The Patreon app is a much better experience, I think, but also by email. First of all, you get an after show for every podcast. So whoever I'm talking to in the show, we usually want to talk about something else and it doesn't quite fit into what we're talking about. So we do it as the after show for patrons. And something I just posted to the Patreons, to my patrons, I found Garden Fork episode number 101 yesterday. And I posted it for patrons, which can be listened to in your podcast app. So the after show has its own unique RSS feed that you can plug into your podcast player, whichever one it is. And so in addition to the regular show on your podcast app, the after show shows up as well. So, and my phone just shut down. So nice. A post called Donut Alone Time. There's a picture of me feeding the Labrador some breakfast. A picture of Andy staring at the camera. I got my ATV, my quad, stuck in the snow, and I took some pictures about how I got it unstuck. Progresses on editing I'm doing. I do some screen snaps of the edit screen, and like the donut show, I did a little screen grab of my editing. Talking about where to find the serial number on an engine, stuff like this. So, yeah, cup of coffee. Aren't I the greatest promoter of my own show? So, cup of coffee a month. There's links in the show notes here. Or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. That's patreon.com/gardenfork. Right? Thank you. The other source for name brand parts is eBay, actually. I've noticed when I want to buy something for like a Briggs & Stratton or a particular engine, from the Briggs & Stratton site, the carburetor is quite expensive, but I don't know if it's a dealer or someone that's bought, you know, a truckload of Briggs & Stratton parts from a company that went out of business, but there's people on eBay that sell brand name parts for very inexpensive, so.
I haven't shopped a lot on eBay. I need to kind of do it. One of the things, I've been watching a lot of Adam Savage videos in the evenings for some reason. I get on these kicks, you know.
Right. He's the one of the half of the team of Mythbusters.
Right. And one, I'm often impressed how much you and Adam Savage are alike in a lot of ways. But he was talking about the stuff he gets on eBay. Of course, he's filthy rich, but for his den, he calls it, this workshop that he broadcasts from, and how he buys bulk of screws and specialty nuts and all that kind of thing. Yep. And he can find almost everything he needs. And then he doesn't have to run to the store, because, of course, running to the store is the hardest part of any DIY project.
Yep.
And for him, it's worthwhile. But, you know, I had an experience, these little button connectors. They're actually telephone wire connectors that you use with single strand wire for the garage door opener sensors. And they're filled with silicone, and you stick the wire in, you crimp it down with a pair of pliers, and it seals the wire and pierces it and joins the connection and everything.
Right. I've seen those.
Yeah. And they're really brilliant for this kind of work. And I wanted some for some reason. And here again, you know, I went to the blue store, I went to the orange store, I went to an electrical supply store. And in the end, I just got on Amazon and they were delivered the next day. You know, that's kind of the way it is with a lot of stuff now. particularly smaller pieces like that. You can shop and try to shop locally as much as you want, but you're not going to come up with a lot of stuff. The tiny stuff. It's just
right.
Not,
but it, you're the only person in Virginia Beach that wants those crimpers. So
yeah.
I have a repair dilemma. It's time versus money. The we have an LG clothing dryer. It's an electric clothing dryer. It's LG model. You know, front loading, very nice. When you close the door to the dryer, no matter whether you have it turned on or not, the drum starts turning.
Oh.
And I looked it up online, and there is a relay on the main circuit board that has failed.
Hmm.
And one repair is replace the board. The other repair is just order the relay and replace the relay, meaning you have to desolder from a circuit bar board that was manufactured at a high-tech factory, you know.
Right.
So the relay, I don't know, maybe $30. The board is $150. And I'm wondering, is it worth my time to try and desolder a relay off of a, you know, a circuit board that's probably the size of your keyboard, you know, computer keyboard? And screwing that up, would I ruin the rest of the board? And how long that will take versus just ordering the $150 circuit board?
Yeah. And you know, you need to take it out and look at it first to make sure that you think you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a tough one. I think I'd just go with the circuit board, and because my soldering skills are not good at all, particularly that kind of detailed fine soldering.
Right. I can solder copper pipe. I'm not the greatest at circuit board soldering.
They're nothing alike, actually. So, yeah.
Because you have to desolder the relay to get it off the board.
Yeah.
You know, you have to heat it up and then pull the solder off, which you can do with a copper mesh wire. They have these little, they almost like look like little vacuum things that'll kind of suck the solder off.
Yeah. And some of it is, there's a learning your limitations, and some of it's just your limitation with frustration.
Yeah.
And some of it's just knowing, you know, it's easier to have somebody else do this. I had a very old, in fact, we still have it, very old dryer that needed to have those rollers in the bottom replaced because they were making so much noise.
Right. They're like rollerblade wheels.
Yeah. And I couldn't find a good tutorial somehow. I didn't look. I was over enthusiastic about doing this. Now, I ordered some from a supply house and did them. And I botched that job up so bad. I actually have a small appliance repairman that I use occasionally.
Uh-huh.
And I hire him because he looks at my stuff and he doesn't laugh. When he comes, he says, "Why'd you try to take this out?" I said, "Well, I was trying to get to the," and he says, no. But he doesn't laugh at me. And that's, and he works with home correcting people who try to do things, themselves.
Yeah.
So there are just a few things that, I will not try anymore. I did want to ask you though, she who must be obeyed asked me specifically to ask you.
Right.
We have these lamps, some sort of a tin metal underneath. They're decorative. They're stamped. They're dimpled, you know, kind of an arty looking thing. I think the base metal underneath has been acid washed, and there's some sort of flaky chrome on the front of them.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, does Eric know anything about how to refinish or redo these? And I said, Eric knows everything. He'll be able to help you, honey. In fact, he'll come down here and do it for you.
Yeah, I'm going to replate your lamps. Yeah.
is that a plating, do you think, or is that a...
It's electroplating.
Electroplating. How do you repair something like that?
Silver nail polish.
Really?
That's what I would try.
Well, unfortunately, these lamps are kind of... It's popping, you know, little curls are popping up all over the lamp.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the plating isn't holding anymore. There's some moisture got under there, or it's just, and a chemical reaction.
Okay. So.
So paint them black.
Ah.
Something. Yeah. Just spray paint them.
Okay. That's, yeah. you know, you can get bumper chrome in a can now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea. I go to the blue store over here near me sometimes and spend time in the paint aisle just looking at the various Krylon finishes they have. And yeah, I am astounded what you can do with, you know, some of these Krylon finishes. I had a metal, or birdhouse that had a metal roof on it, what had been copper. And I didn't want to, fool with trying to burnish up the copper and that kind of thing. So I painted it. And by being careful and patient and going in layers and adding a good etching primer beforehand, I finished that out and it shines. It has depth and detail and color. And
yeah.
It's actually kind of a showpiece out there on the end of the porch. And
it's all about the prep. The real, yeah. Especially with spray paint.
Yeah. And it actually conceals inside of it a small camera that watches the front door, watches people from the back as they approach my front door.
Of course. Of course.
But it's a very nice looking birdhouse. It was just something we found. Actually, it had been on the property when we bought it. Else is new in your life?
I was going to talk about that at the after show for the patrons, actually.
Okay. Well, then, let me see. How long have we been at this? I don't know.
Did we 24 minutes.
Did we get people their money's worth since it's free? I'm sure they have gotten to where they're going to go. And
yeah.
We will talk about your new topic in the after show. And I just wanted to... mentioned the garage door thing and the importance of going through and reading the comments. Don't pay a lot of attention to the sour grapes. Look for the problem solvers. And,
yeah.
Because sour grape. Oh, I guess it'd help you just say, well, don't buy this. That's okay. But people go into a rant, you know, about who they contacted and why and what they were told or they refused to answer. And I sent a certified letter and then I sent my mother to talk to them. And and it's just like, you know, give them a 1-star rating. It didn't work. And, just let it go.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Hey, if you have a chance, would you leave a review on our the podcast on iTunes? We haven't had any reviews since November. Heather wrote a review in November. So that would be great. Helps people discover the show. So go out and do cool stuff and make it a great day. And we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you later, my friend. Bye-bye.
Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. Our producer is Sean O'Neill. If you need an amazing podcast producer, visit Sean's site, seaninbrooklyn.com. That's Sean, S-E-A-N, in Brooklyn.com. Our executive producer is Jimmy Goose. For more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes, visit hollowbooks.com. The music in the show is licensed from audioblocks.com and uniquetracks.com.